All right. Let's clap for Howard.
Thank you. That was the best part. That was the best part. Okay, you don't know what we did. I didn't do anything. I didn't put on the Okay. So, hold on. So you told me, I hadn't had time to really, like, go into the matter, but I did hear inklings, like, there's a little bit of things, and I knew I wanted something I wanted to get back to and find out, like, what things I'm going to write for. My next question was, what's funny? So the point of the story is, if Bill Gates knew that he was going out the day after the election, they were somewhere else, they were free, but it still bothered them immensely that they had been enslaved and everything that they had gone through. Yes, Hashem has the plan. He has a master plan, and he understood that that's what they needed, and he's the one who kept what was needed, and he's the one who made it happen, but it still bothered him immensely that they had to go through that. And it tells us that when Paro got his just reward at the end of just punishment at the end of his life, Paro looked around him and he felt pleased with himself, or at least he was comforted with himself because he was in quote unquote good company. He was in company of others like him who also were receiving punishment for the same kinds of things, and he was like, okay, you know, too bad, but at least, you know, I'm with friends. But Hashem was not comforted. Hashem did not say, okay, but at least they're free now. That wasn't enough for Hashem to say that they were free now. Here they were. This was actually the fulfillment of the role, the fulfillment of the dream, the fulfillment of the promise that he had promised to the others for all of those years, to Avram, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov. Your children will be slaves in a land that does not belong to them. They are going to go down to the depths of exile. They are going to be free. They will receive the Torah. They will go to exile. This is all coming true. This was all happening now. This was all happening right now, but yet still the fact that they were not, that they had had this experience happen to them was still very troubling to him. I'm sorry, I disappeared. Sorry, it's recording now. Oh my god, now it's disappearing. How did it disappear? There's no screen. I'm sorry, yeah. Okay. I tell him that I disappeared, doesn't
matter. Kinda.
Yes?
This is Milder. I see you on screen.
I
do.
You do? Okay. Can I disappear to myself?
I guess so. I see you and there's someone behind you.
Okay, fine. No problem, because I couldn't see myself anymore, and I always do, so I wasn't sure if you could see me. Fine. As long as you can hear me now, I guess.
I can hear you now. Thank you. I missed the beginning.
I'm sorry. Oh, boy. I think the heat is getting far. I don't know. Humidity here of 40 degrees Celsius today, which is what? 100. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So here we go. So Hashem is thanking us. Hashem is so happy for... Hashem was so... upset with what had happened, that he is not going to forget. On the other hand, there's also things that Hashem does remember, and that is quote that he talks about. What he does remember is the chesed that we did for him. Now let's think, what chesed, what kindness did we do for Hashem? Anything that we do, quote unquote, for Hashem is not really for him, it's really for us, right? It's because we need it, and Hashem does not need something from it, it's for us and for ourselves. But something that Hashem talked about for thousands of years after it happened was the concept he said that we did to him, that when we were freed from Egypt, we followed him out into the barren desert. Now, what kind of a chesed is that? What kind of kindness is that? If you were enslaved for 210 years and you were offered freedom, wouldn't you go with the person who offered you freedom? Of course you would. So why is that considered a chesed? It's a natural tendency. It would be something that one would expect. Hashem is taking them out. Hashem has promised us for years, and now it's happening. Of course I'm coming. Count me in. You know, I want to go. I'm ready. So what does it try to show us? It's Hashem's love for us that, of course, Hashem knew we were going to come. And of course he wanted us to come. And of course it was all part of the plan. But because of Hashem's love for us, any small thing, any tiny thing that we quote-unquote do for him, he cherishes forever, and he holds on to it forever. And thousands of years later, in the time of Yirmiyahu, who we talked about, Yirmiyahu was alive in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, when the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, he is still talking about it and still giving them reward for doing it because of the heat and the heat of the endless love that Hashem has for us, and he continually wants to be good for us, and wants them to give us so many things. So Rabbi Akiva Eger has a question on this. Rabbi Akiva Eger lived in the late 1700s to the early 1800s. And he said, well, if Hashem loves us so much, and this is how Hashem feels towards us, and he's overabundant in his love for us, and giving for us, and doing for us, and thanking us for the tiniest little things that we can do, how do we increase our love for Hashem? So he tells us that if we want to know, we can look in our sitter.
the sitter is a good place to look. Because if we look in our sitter, there's a prayer that we say every day, more than once a day, we say the Shema. Right? The part of the basic principle of Judaism is the Tefillah Shema. And in Shema, we talk about our love for Hashem. Love Hashem, your God. But if we look in our sitter in Shachar, it's a morning prayer, the first time of the day when we say it, the prayer that comes before that is called Ahava Rabba. Ahava Rabba means much love, increasing love, everlasting and eternal love, a love that increases, a love that continues on and goes on and on perpetually. So he tells us to look at Ahava Rabba for some ideas, because when we look in Ahava Rabba, we'll see examples of things that Hashem does for us, and things and kindnesses and things that Hashem bestows upon us. And by looking at those things, we'll feel that love that Hashem has for us. And as we said before, panim el panim, to mind how panim el panim, as the water, you know, the reflection of the water radiates and resonates, will reflect back that love that Hashem has for us. So, I took the opportunity to go to one of my favorite stars, which unfortunately is not on the sources, but we could add it in, Rav Schwab on prayer. Rav Schwab on prayer, Rabbi Schwab was the leader of the German, he was a German, the Breuer congregation in Washington Heights, a survivor, he came from Germany, and he had a school, a big school, the Breuer Kahila in Washington Heights, and apparently he gave, I don't know if it was a weekly seer, but he gave an ongoing seer of many years going through the sitter. And it's a fabulous book, yes, it's really very beautiful, and he goes through from the beginning. He goes through Chassidus, from Adon Olam, and all the brachos, Shema, Shemona Esrei, and he goes through like line by line, sentence by sentence. He gives an overview of each tefillah, and then he goes through line by line, and it's really a beautiful book. There's so many beautiful lessons that can be learned from there. And what he says is that if you look in Ahava Rabba, he tells us that these words, Ahava Rabba, Hashem Hashem Elokeinu, a great love, Hashem has loved us, and an increasing love. He says this phrase actually does not come from Tanakh. If you look in the Torah anywhere, we won't see these words, but we'll see a similar pasuk, a similar expression, which is Ahavat Olam Ahatifa. It comes from Yirmiyahu, and we find it in our Davar, that I have loved you a love forever. And it tells us that this was made up in the time of the Gaonim, the time period of the Gaonim, the ones who founded this tefillah and incorporated it into our davening. And he takes actually a word which talks about kindness and compassion that's in that tefillah. And the word is chemla. Chemla is mercy. Chemla is pity. Similar to what we say in Modahani, right? Modahani, the Panecha, Melechai, the Kayam. And then it ends off that Rava and Abhemla Rava, with great mercy you have returned my Nishama to me in the morning. So I would like to actually cross-reference that. I'm surmising that what we're going to say about the word Chemla here would fit in to the Modahani over there. So let's first listen to it here and see how it connects to Modahani. She's saying that the word Chemla, or the expression of the Shoah, the root of the word Chemla, pity, is actually in the Torah only two times. So again, that's the klupa, right? A word that's written once, twice, or only in select circumstances lead us to that neon sign of flashing. Let's look at this word. So if we look at this word compassion, the two times when this word is used, one is used by Basya. Basya was the daughter of Paro, and Paro's daughter found this little baby boy floating in the Nile River. What did she do when she saw the boy? We know the famous story. She took him out. She rescued him. That's chemla. Because chemla is compassion that overrides sin, overrides judgment, law. In the time at that time, the law of the land was kill the baby boys and drown them. But she had chemla. She had mercy with overturns the law of the land and saves the child. So that's chemla. So too also, there's another time when this expression is used, and that is used by the topic of a person called a mesis. A mesis is a person who convinces others to worship and serve idols. An idol worship action for this person is that he is supposed to be sentenced and he is supposed to be put to death. The Torah uses the word over there, v'lo tachmol alav. Do not have pity on him, because in that case, do not turn the judgment into mercy. Do not override that judgment. It is forbidden. Usually, if a person were to be convicted of a crime and sentenced to death, we would look for ways to get them out of it. It was very rare in the Jewish basin that somebody was actually put to death. Very, very rare. We hear about all the halakhos and all the laws of basin and the different forms of death that the basin was allowed to use, but they were hardly ever used. In the, you know, the hundreds of years that basin had power, it was hardly ever used. And if it was used, they were deemed to be a corrupt basin because it shouldn't have happened. There should have been a way to let him out. But once it comes to the mason, to this person who convinces others of idol worship, there's no way out. We are not allowed to have chenla. So too, what does that have to do with our relationship with Hashem? Hashem has chenla on us. Hashem has mercy on us. Even at a time when Hashem could theoretically have been on us or judgment on us, Hashem doesn't. Hashem changes the din, Hashem changes the judgment and the justice, and serves us and treats us with compassion and with pity instead. So that's chenla. So when we say also in the morning that Hashem returns our neshama to us with chenla rabba, with great compassion, it sounds like it has a relationship there, that it means a similar thing, like maybe we weren't deserving of waking up the next morning, but Hashem led us. Hashem changed that sin, and Hashem gave us a chance of another new day, another fresh start to do what we can. So now, let's look at a little bit more of this relationship of Hashem to us. So there is actually a situation in Vayikra where Hashem is talking to the Bnei Yisrael, and he tells them, "V'lo shig'al nafshi etchem. I will not become disgusted with you. I will not be filled with contempt for you. I will not get sick of you. I will not tire of you or have enough of you." So what does that mean? That's a strange thing. The Bartanura wants to ask that question. He says, what kind of expression is that for Hashem to say that I will not get disgusted with you, I will not get sick of you, I will not tire of you? Why would we think that? Why would we think that Hashem would get tired of us as his people? And then what? Change us, choose another nation, pick other people instead? What does that mean? What does that mean? And besides, we know that in all of the promises that Hashem promised throughout Tanakh, throughout the Torah, even in the times when Hashem was upset at us, and Hashem was warning us about our misdeeds or that we were being discarded, even there, Hashem said, but I will never give up on you, and I will never forget about you. So why is this just out of the blue? Why would we think that? Why does Hashem feel the need to tell us? So the Bartanura explains, and this is a question that I think we've mentioned here before. Divra Torah, v'lashon, v'nei adam. The Torah speaks in the expression of man. In an expression of man could mean two things. It could mean either that the Torah talks the talk, like we talk, it's using words that we use, or that it's using an expression that we can understand with our human mind. Right? Because Hashem is not human, so we can't possibly fathom what Hashem knows and what Hashem understands and what the angels know and understand, because it's beyond our comprehension. It's beyond our ability. We're not, you know, like they say for kids, it's not age appropriate or it's not developmentally appropriate. Like a kid in grade one can't process multiplication because they're still working on their simple addition. They can't understand it yet. So too, because we have a human mind and our mind is limited, we can only understand things from a human perspective. You know, that's why I think I have a hard time with these science fiction books. I think I'm just too human. I don't get it. You know, Hannah Esther was doing this year. She was doing A Wrinkle in Time with Mrs. Who and Mrs. What, and I understand the book. And she is coming to me because she was all frustrated. She tried to read the book. She didn't understand it. So every night I would sit down with her, and you know, the kids like their stories. I'd best sit on the couch right over there, and I'm reading the book. It's not going through my head. I don't get wrinkling, and I don't know, whatever, what other, basically, and these other words, and, like, I got it enough because I understood it more than her. So I was able to kind of tell her what's going on, but it doesn't make sense to me. Like, when I'm reading a book, I want to read. You know, I want to guess what's going on. I want to lose my mind to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to read a novel. I want to, like, let my mind wander and pretend I'm somewhere else. Like, to read something and I have to, like, try to understand it. That's not enjoying it. That's cool. I mean, I'm cool. Don't get me wrong. I think, but no. But it's just not, like, your mind can only understand certain things. It can't understand more than that. So the Torah has to talk to us using expressions that we can understand. So what does this expression mean in them? Nisroy tells us a piece of advice. And one of the pieces of advice that Nisroy gives us is that when you have a good friend, no matter how good you are and how best friends you are, don't hang out together too often. Why? And very often, when you, no matter how good friends you are with somebody, you need some space, you need some time, even in a relationship, you already need their own private space. Everyone needs the time for themselves and the time to reflect on themselves and not always to be on top of another person, always with another person and spending time in all of our relationships. We need that space because, you know, what do they think? Familiarity breeds contempt or something like that? What's the expression? So the more you spend time with each other, as close as you are, different things start to bother you, things get on your nerves, you had enough, you know, oh, it's not always such a good idea. So we try to say, let's take some space, let's take some time off. So too Hashem says, because it's a human concept that we can understand of that needing space kind of thing, that we might feel and we might kind of transfer that feeling to Hashem. And we might think, well, if I'm hanging out, so to speak, with Hashem for so long, maybe he's going to get sick of me. Maybe he's going to tire of me because we've been around for thousands of years. We've been, you know, sharing the same space. Hashem says, no, I promise you, I will not get sick of you. I will not tire of you. I love you. I care about you so much, and I want to spend that time with you. When it comes to that expression, I will never give up my life for you. I will never give up the connection that I have to you. I love you so much. I care about you so much. I care about you greater than the love that a parent has for a child. Greater than that. And that's usually the expression of, you know, when you think of a tight, close relationship to that of a parent and a child. It happens that just this past Sunday, on Tisha B'Av, one of my sister's friends, she somehow I got on her email list, and she often sends me random things. I don't know, a speech here and there, you know, a quote of the day, a different thing. And I usually open them. I do usually open them because often there's something in there that's interesting and something that's helpful. And on Tuesday, I got an email from her directing me to a website which is on the bottom of your store sheet, and it was a sheet that was given, or pre-recorded, I should say, by an organization called URA. URA is an organization, they run summer camps, and they have, during the year, they have learning programs for children that are, may or may not be in a Jewish day school or in a Jewish environment all the time. They have camps, they have learning programs for the children, for their families, and they run all kinds of educational activities. So they had a pre-recorded message for people to listen to and to watch over Tisha B'Av on what you can do to foster good feelings between people to, you know, now that we know that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because of not good feelings towards people to help foster good feelings. And they had a pre-recorded message from Rabbi Gabriel Sassone. Rabbi Gabriel Sassone is the father of the seven children who perished in that fire right before Pesach, right? And as you can, I mean, like, when you think of the ultimate horror, I mean, I don't know how you could say what's an ultimate horror, but that certainly ranks right up there. You know, that was pretty heavy. I remember we found out about it, and it was just, I remember feeling literally sick to my stomach when I heard about it. I remember, like, feeling like my stomach was turning and, like, getting the cramp in my stomach. It really, really bothers me, and it bothers everybody, and thinking about it. And, of course, when we heard about it, it bothered us. And even now, like, we're, like, trying to understand, like, what happened now. Like, What about the wife? What about his surviving daughter? Apparently, I think I read that the wife is out of the hospital. She's still in intensive rehab. The daughter, I'm not sure. At one point, I got an email saying that she was having a surgery for her breathing. I don't know. It sounds like, I guess, that they're as well as could be expected. There's always room for more. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Of course, nobody wants to cry, but we're all kind of, you know, guilty, and we want the best for them, you know? I don't think it's that curiosity because we want to know, but because we're just so hoping that they can heal, right? That they can heal. So he talks about his loss, and he talks about how he's dealing with his loss, and he talks about his children. And one of the things that he said just really, it resonated with me, and it has to do with this topic. He said that he always, you know, would talk to his children, and, you know, and he always say to your children, to your grandchildren, who loves you? Right? And you wait for them to respond, mommy, bubby, baby, baba, daddy, you know, auntie this, auntie that, you know, like, obviously the answer's going to be the person who asks the question. So he said he would always ask his children, who loves you? And if he would ask if they would say, hey. And if the mother asked if they would say, mommy. But then he would correct them. And he would say, it's true that daddy loves you. It's true that mommy loves you. But who loves you even more? And they would then tell them to say, Hashem. Hashem loves you. So it's got to be that they were conditioned. Who loves you? Hashem. Who loves you next? Daddy. Who loves you next? Mommy. So the answer was always, Hashem first loves you, followed by mommy and daddy, and the siblings, and then, you know, the extension of the family as it went on. And he had to, I'm not sure if he said he was the one who had to tell his daughter about what happened, or he was obviously there, you know, that part he didn't say. But when the daughter was finding out the news, he said to her, who loves you? And she said, Hashem. And she said, and like, I had shivers up my spine.
Oh,
you know, and she said that Hashem loves you. Who loves you also, daddy? Who loves you also, mommy? We love you, and Hashem loves you, and we don't understand how we can love this, but so that Hashem loves you. And she said that's their motto, and that's their theme of how they're dealing with it. You know, they don't understand, they don't know, but the only thing that's keeping them going is that Hashem loves you, and the love in Hashem would only do something for them which is good for them, even if they don't understand the good in it. And it just, literally, I mean, like, even just telling it again, it just then shivers up my spine, and there's so many parts of that that then shivers up my spine. Like, if you stop and think about it, the fact that he taught this to his children, the fact that she was able to answer it, she's a kid, she's a little girl, you know, she's 16 years old, the fact that she was able to answer that question at that time is just mind-boggling. Right? It's just mind-blowing. So what an unbelievable special person this girl is, and what an unbelievable family they are, and just, you know, anything that maybe we could dedicate, whatever we're learning tonight, you know, love for Hashem, dedicated in their memory, that we feel and we recognize the love that Hashem has for us, and to incorporate that into our lives, and maybe to incorporate that phrase somehow into our lives and into the lives of the people who are close to us, to give them strength for training for whatever happens in our lives, whatever goes on. And you know, it's hard to like branch off on that. Like, I feel like I could just like stop and just meditate on that alone. That would be powerful. I considered showing it tonight, but I felt that that's the kind of thing it's best to watch it by yourself. You know, it was it was perfect for Tisha B'Av, perfect for after Tisha B'Av, you know, but something that to watch. I just, I gave you the link, you could watch it on your own, and just see, he's just an unbelievable person, and then he spoke a very beautiful story about one of the children, about how he, at a young age, how he showed his skills for a child in his nursery school, and just kind of take those lessons, you know, in their marriage. Okay. So not only does Hashem love us, not only do our mother and our father and our aunts and our uncles and our immediate family love us, but that love that others have for us, the Chumash HaVavot and Shara B'Tachon tells us that love actually comes from Hashem. The love, we love Hashem, Hashem loves us, and those who love us, the love also comes from Hashem. So Hashem is sending us His love in all kinds of ways throughout all the different relationships that we have. It tells us that b'chol rachamim, b'chol chemra, that everything, all the kinds of different mercy and pity that in the relationships that we have, that all is coming from Hashem. Hashem is the source of love. And any love that we get comes straight from the source. I think that that's the, is that an advertising phrase for one of the waters? Straight from the source?
Yeah.
I think like one of those bottled waters. You know, they take it straight, they bottle it straight at the source. So to love is straight from the source. It all comes from Hashem. How can we apply this to our life? When we go to school, I believe it's on our parochah, on the covering of our Kodesh. And if it's not on the covering of ours, it's probably somewhere at the top of the Kodesh or somewhere in the school. Many schools have it. Most schools have. Shivisi Hashem Lenegi Tamit. I put Hashem before me constantly. Hashem is always before me. So what does that mean? That right at this moment, we are in the presence of Hashem. We're learning Torah, so of course Hashem is here, but even when we're not learning Torah, Hashem is here, and that Hashem loves us so much, no matter what. Hashem loves us even more than we love ourselves. And I'll glance off to a little bit of a Hasidic tale. I don't usually, but this was it. I'm not Hasidic. I don't have all the Hasidic tales, but this is actually coming from Zrosu Tehillim, another fabulous book by Zelig Sitzkin of Israel. And he quotes the best about Shemsel, who says that the word Shivisi not only means to place it in front of you, but means to place it equal. As if you had a scale in front of you and you had two objects or two situations to measure which one is greater, which one is better. So when it comes to things that are before us and the events that happen to us, see these things. I put them before me so that they are equal. Normally what happens is we have a certain situation. And if we like the situation, or we like the results of the situation, then we feel good about it, and we're in a good mood, and it makes us happy. If we don't like the situation, or if we don't like the results, or it's just something that we would rather skip, then it puts us into a bad mood, and makes us unhappy. But if we realize that CVC, that those things are inherently good, because they are given to us by the one who loves us, and that helps us to maintain that equilibrium, that balance on the scale. There's not good and bad. It's not that this is good, I'm happy, this is bad, I'm frustrating, I'm sad or upset or angry. But when I realize that it's all coming from the source of somebody who loves me, then they are equal. They are the one and the same.
It's
subject. Exactly. Subject. Equal. Right? That's like she subject. Thank you for pointing that out, because I was wondering how we got that. I think you should see, but that's like, okay, it's a Hasidic story. Love, Because in Hebrew, a rechem is a womb. And the womb is where a person was grown before they were born, right? A person developed. So it tells us just like the natural love that a parent and a child have, because the child grew within the mother, so too, that's how much our relationship should be with Hashem. Like, the feeling of a parent and a child. That love for, the love that we have for Hashem and the love that Hashem has for us is that natural love between, like, a mother and a father, and even that much greater. And Hashem shows us these little signs along the way, and it's kind of up to us to find the signs and see the signs of how Hashem loves us. So, when I was preparing this, I was, you know, thinking of some examples of Hashem loves us, and again, you know, not to get too sad, but I was just thinking of a young man that we knew that unfortunately was ill and he had passed on, and one of the things that they were saying about him, that while he was ill, he was undergoing a lot of pain and a lot of distress, and how one of the things that kept him going was he would be whispering under himself, Hashem loves, Hashem loves, Hashem loves me. And how people who would go to visit him or to go and to cheer him up or to go and to give him some encouragement would say, never mind. Like, what if, I mean, not that they, you know, they felt like, not necessarily that he doesn't need encouragement, but what can I say to him that will to help him if he's already saying those things? What more can I offer than a person who's going through the trials and tribulations that he went through and he's just saying Hashem loves? So let's take a little spin on that of another person who could have said Hashem loves me, Hashem loves me. Probably did, but we don't know because the conversation is not recorded. When Yosef was being sold by his brothers, and he was going down to make all those stops, Mitzrayim and Midian and Ishmael and all the different tribes that, took him and sold him and passed him on from one to the other, it tells us that the caravan, that he was traveling in, when he was sold, the caravan he was traveling in was selling spices. And like we said, if the Torah uses a condensed version, if the Torah uses single letters or single words or even little vowels to represent something, why do I now here in Ottawa in 5775, 2016, why do I need to know what was in the wagon that Yosef was traveling in? Makes no difference, does it? Was it potatoes? Was it onions? Was it spices? Okay. You know, it seems like an interesting piece of information, but irrelevant. So Rashi says, no, not irrelevant. Because in those days, the traveling salespeople, what they would sell was kerosene and oil and all kinds of things that had a stench, that had a horrible smell, and were noxious. And Hashem did not want Yosef to suffer even more. So he caused that this day there was a wagon, and the wagon happened to be selling spices, sweet smelling spices, fragrant spices, regardless. I mean, even if you might not like the particular smell of a specific spice, there's pleasant to be around with. There's a you know, a pleasant association. Not like kerosene, right? We talk about, you know, when you go to, when I take my kids to the gas station. Like, shut the windows! Shut the windows! Shut the windows! It's gonna stink! It's gonna stink! So imagine that's just from the air blowing in. Imagine for Yoshi to be traveling, you know, dumped into the back of a wagon, 17 years old, being taken away from his family, sold by his brothers, not knowing where he's going, with no way to contact his home, traveling in a stinky kerosene wagon. So even we call this, I had taught this in a different workshop that I had done for a different class, and we called it the silver lining. Right? We said that just, you know, Hashem, he's being punished, and he's not being punished, I shouldn't use that word, but he's undergoing a tribulation, and he's undergoing a trial. Why make it worse? Why don't make it worse for Hashem? Was trying to give him that tampering, you know, that little fluff, despite everything else that he was going through. And gave him that at least if he's going down and if he's suffering, there should be some comfort within that it was something sweet and it was something pleasant, fragrant, to make it a little, you know, that much easier. You know, the same way Hashem, you know, praises us to pieces for that
any chesed that we did, we followed after him. So too, even that much easier if we're just like looking for the little crack. If we look for those little signs of Hashem showing us that he loves us and Hashem looking out for it, we could call, and looking out for those examples, okay, we could call it Hashgacha Pesach, right? Hashem has that individual watching on us. We know that Hashem is looking at us not only as a group, but each one of us separately. Hashem is looking out for us. Now, how often does it happen that we... I'm trying to think of an example off the top of the head. We probably could all think of something, you know, something that could have gone wrong and it didn't, or you quote unquote happened to be in the right place at the right time, or something turned out better than it could have. These are all little messages and the little gifts that Hashem is throwing our way because Hashem loves us so much and Hashem cares about us, pun and el pun and face to face, and it all began when Hashem spoke to us at Har Sinai, and it continues thousands of years later to this very day. And we hope that, of course, it continues, and we recognize that love that he has for us, because then in turn, one day, we could talk about how we could love Hashem back and even more. Any questions or comments?
I think about the Adam of Life, when you said that Hashem has things that we have on the stand, and there's no thing on the stand. But we got the
point
that the past 7 months.
Right.
So there's food that's Hashem. They're going to do it only after they're going to say, they're going to pull back and have fun.
Right.
They're going to do it first, and then they're going to do it.
Okay.
nothing to ask, and then they want you to do what they call them lunges, and you're using different muscles, and it hurts because you weren't trained to do that. If you've been going in this direction, and now they want you to do something else, it hurts, and you can't understand that because this part of you maybe was underused, or maybe it hasn't been tapped into as much. And you could find certain strengths within yourself that, well, many people have been asked, like after a certain catastrophe, a certain event that happens to them, would they have given it up? Like if they had a chance for it to go away, would they give it away? And many people say, well, while they never would have asked for it, they do recognize that there were results from it that they were able to walk away with and appreciate. So they never would have wanted it in the first place, but they do recognize that somehow they grew from it and they morphed into something else. That's actually one of the reasons behind my little butterfly. Did I tell the butterfly story on the first day of class? No? Okay, so my logo is butterflies. Two reasons. Number one, I love butterflies. I think butterflies are like the sweetest insects. They're an insect, a bug, I don't know what they are. Some creature. I think that they're really adorable. And so I also thought it was, it's pretty nice. Like, if you watch a butterfly fly, oh, thank you. Like, it's so delicate. Like, they just... That comes next.
Right.
And the beauty is yet to come. You know, like, this caterpillar, like a caterpillar thinks that this is it, and it's yet to come. Like, it's going to morph into something else. It morphs into something more special and to something even greater. So, you have some little butterflies on your bed. So, through our learning and through our discussions, we'll, grow and morph into something even more beautiful. So,
stable child, and he was a full-time occupation, and that, I think he meant